spend a lot of time testifying for the FDA, hoping that they will change to over-the-counter preparation so they can get it, and they've just approved that as of February. This February, apparently, they'll come on the market. But that's an issue that women don't get treated because they don't have the money for the therapy, and we don't have money in the county to pay for them and give it to them. So that's a big, terrible issue which we lobby drug companies for trying to get them. But that's a that's an issue of the clinic. But I don't know of a clinic that sends women away and says, you don't have to be treated. You don't need to be treated for vaginal candidiasis.
It's not, I don't think that it's that women are being sent away and not being treated, but it's when we will see someone who comes in and she has, we don't know her HIV status.
Right, right.
And we're treating her for 2 and 3 months, and we say, you gotta change your diet, you gotta get rid of, you know, the weed, and don't drink any alcohol, blah, 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 and she's still having it. Now, if we were not activists and thinking, like, this, you know, I start to think, this woman possibly HIV positive. This thought crosses my mind, okay? Now, it crosses my mind because I've had the opportunity to do this research and to think these things and to work with activists. All right, but now, if you guys would publish this information, other people could begin to think like me and think, wait a minute, maybe something else is happening.
I have a question. I understand this controversy about vaginal candidiasis. We've raised questions about several conditions. Which, if any of them, do you all see being possibly added to the case definition, if any? Which?
I'm going to say there's another issue here, and that the educational issue. We're currently revising the classification system.
Well, I'd like an answer to the question.
I think that's
a good
educational tool.
Well, I would say that the you know, that yeah, that, she, that he asked.
Which of any of these are candidates
we
for
really
you
need to, know this.
To
what
be
are
added
candidates?
To? Well,
for getting added.
I think what we have right now, we're going to be looking at the spectrum of disease data. We're talking about serious bacterial infections that we will be looking at, okay, in that project. That would include PID. There are a host of others. Mm-hmm. It is by far not the only one. Well, bacterial pneumonia and sepsis are the leading.
Yeah, those are the
women.
Two big things I think we're missing.
And the issue of cervical cancer.
And so PID is just one, which is multi-bacterial.
Right.
And more difficult to treat. But I think, as we said,
Yeah, there are about 4 cancers we're looking at right now. And I think the data are not really in on any of them. And I put cervical cancer in that too.
Okay, you know, but you have to understand our frustration. You've just told us that it is true that you have a 4,000-person study, the New Spectrum of Disease study, that somehow, lo and behold, there are only 7% women.
Well, this is not a 4,000-person study. This is a surveillance.
I know.
It is not, you enroll 4,000 and you quit. This is ongoing enrollment.
I know it's ongoing, but somehow, in the way the sites were chosen, don't ask me, okay? I know that it's not taking place in Newark, New Jersey.
Right.
I know it's not taking place in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Okay,
well,
I know it's not taking place where you would have 3,900 women and 10 men. I know it.
We've got 4 sites in the South, and there are more women reported from the South than there were in New York and New Jersey.
Okay, but
so
there's still, but then how come you only have 7% in this study?
Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking at.
Okay, but a year, but you're saying to us that we're going to again have to wait, okay, while you, just like the ACTG, figure out how you're going to get women in your study. Okay?
But I heard you say earlier that you were setting standards for
Now for the new people that are coming in.
Yeah.
Okay, but already you've gotten 4,000 people in and only 7% of them are women. So what is this going to be, another 55,000 person male aspirin study? I mean,
No, I stopped at 4,000 and said we need to set new priorities.
Okay, but still, that's four. As far as I'm concerned,
that's
4,000 too many.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, you've got several hundred.
Oh,
women
except
in there.
For the 7%. Okay, and obviously from what you said, there are hardly any IV drug users in it, mm-hmm. and it's very low on people of color, right? Because you said that you have to increase those two numbers also.
That is where we know the least. It's not because there's
no,
such a low
in those 4,000.
We know the least about
in those 4,000, what's the percentage of people of color?
I don't know that.
What is the percentage?
I'll be happy to get you there.
I would like to know that all that I'm saying is that we cannot keep waiting year after year after year after year while this kind of study gets done, and at the end of 4,000 cases, you have to stop because there's only 7% women. Okay, that is not acceptable when people are dying. And when you're telling us that you can't change a surveillance definition until the data comes in, and then you're telling us that there's only 7% women and now you have to wait until you get the money to get more women in, what you're basically saying is nothing is going to happen.
That's it.
Okay, and that's not acceptable. You know, when but when the case definition, when the case definition got made, you got a group of clinicians around. You can get people who have been working with HIV-positive women who will tell you that they see cervical cancer, that they see PID that is virulent in HIV-positive women.
Yeah, what's the purpose of you seeing clinical observations if you're not going to incorporate them into your criteria?
I looked at all the death certificates for women in 1987, which is the most recent year I have.
I saw that study, yeah.
There were five that had HIV infection also listed. They may have been missed.
But why are we waiting until they're dead?
Right.
To find out.
I mean, I know what you're doing. You're trying to get it done quickly by going to death certificate instead of having to run a study.
No, but we've also got these other studies.
But why aren't you just convening, doing the same thing you did early on for every other group? You got a group of people together who are doing this work to see people.
Well, actually, I'm not sure that's true. The early case definitions were based on epidemiologic data.
Yes, there was.
Yes, it wasn't clinical.
We
didn't ask clinicians to come in.
Around the country looking for more cases, and we found our opportunistic infections. It wasn't clear what it was an epidemic of at first. It was an epidemic of Kaposi's sarcoma, an epidemic of pneumocystis pneumonia, or what was going on. So we looked for everything. What we find is what got included in the definition.
Right. But you didn't go and do 9 zillion research studies.
Right.
Well,
okay, you knew
did
right away that there was...
National research study, sure.
What?
That's the kind of research we do here, field studies.
No, but I'm saying like the larger studies, the information from the larger surveillance, you know, the larger natural histories and studies and stuff didn't start coming in until way past you had an original definition.
Well,
okay, and then
there weren't
and
that
then
many
a
cases, so there weren't large studies. But I mean, Peter's been here since the first month of the epidemic, and knows more of the history than anybody in the room. And there were very small numbers early on when these case definitions were made, and they were based on the occurrence of a disease which was uncharacteristic in a person of that age. It didn't have an explained etiology. And those were the characteristics. But vaginal thrush is not one of those diseases that would have been included in that original case definition, right?
And here
it was
oral,
right?
No, we didn't include that. The analogy was people who are immunosuppressed, the diseases that they get, just as you said. And the diseases that they get are these very unusual opportunistic infections. And like
but worldwide, the major opportunistic infection is tuberculosis.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Tuberculosis that lots of people get.
But are you saying that initially that's what you looked to? You looked like
we looked for infections. That, I mean, that's what we were saying, that we...
And what did you do with that information?
It appeared that there was an immunosuppressed, that immunosuppression was the reason for the disease processes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that any disease that we thought was, came as a result, as the bottom line was usually immunosuppression, like pneumocystis pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for example, cryptococcal meningitis, mm-hmm. we weren't sure about because that can occur in certain areas of the country, and so we decided yes to include it or not to include
mm-hmm.
it, depending on, you know, and then with herpes, we asked about herpes, there was severe persistent herpes that first presented, the first group of drug users actually presented with herpes in New York.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the first things, in fact, that's how I found out about those, because I was a herpes researcher at the time.
Right.
And acyclovir was just being tested, and we looked at the, you know, the herpes in these patients was so severe, it just eroded everything. So it wasn't frequently recurring herpes. It was herpes that never went away and invaded tissue and actually killed people. So that was a severe invasive disease. And then we had a lot of problems defining it later on, why we would include herpes, because the first cases we saw were terribly severe and killed the patient. But now, we don't see that. In other words, now we have acyclovir.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps people, at least prevents some of the very severe infections that people died from before. so that herpes was included because that's what a number of patients presented with first. And why wouldn't we include pelvic inflammatory disease in that? Well, we may eventually when the bacteria
More to the point, why wouldn't you include HPV and CIN? Because clearly there are studies that exist, and I'm sure that you know, because you've done this research. I'm looking at this huge paper right here, HPV in Women, Methodologic Issues and Role of Immune Suppression. Okay, and it goes over all forms of immune suppression from HIV to renal transplant to chemotherapy, and what are the outcomes in terms of cervical cancer and HPV. Now, if you made that decision, okay, to understand PCP along those guidelines, for instance, before actually seeing, I think the PCP is the example you gave. I don't know why you, in another kind of immune suppressed population, but HIV negative, why don't you make that same decision now? Why are you resistant to changing this? And this is something that affects both men and women with anogenital papillomavirus and cancers.
I think once people are immunosuppressed, that you can expect the clinical burden of any person that's been well reported with renal transplant and other people. The problem is there'll be a lot of HIV positive women who aren't immunosuppressed who have these conditions, and there are a lot of non-HIV infected women that have these conditions, and some of them will be quite free to manage. And we talked about the need to do studies, and the big problem is they get anecdotal reports of people who are caring for HIV positive women. Some of them have a cancer. Some of them are seeing women with pelvic inflammatory disease. But if you go to any institution in the country, just down the street or wherever, in a department of obstetrics and gynecology, we're taking care of a lot of women with cervical cancer and a lot of women with PID, and most of them aren't HIV. How they're related, and that takes the kinds of studies that this takes some time. It's a problem, but we also talked about the importance of having the information be correct when it comes out, and we feel strongly that it needs to be correct like you do.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
You have not convinced me one bit.
Can I ask?
All I keep hearing is that, and I still hear the same thing, that because these things appear in women and because they just get worse when women are immunosuppressed, they shouldn't be in the definition of AIDS. And that you're going to scare a lot of nice women who get these infections anyway, you know, and but I know that the, quotes, not nice women are dying. Mm. Okay? And I totally understand why you would want to understand the etiology of everything in AIDS. And frankly, there's very little anyone knows about MAI, toxoplasmosis, even pneumocystis, which is now breaking through again, you know, after treatments. I mean, there is hardly anything that anyone knows about any of the diseases that are listed as opportunistic infections. There's very little research that has been done on almost any of those diseases and why they follow the course they do in HIV-positive people. And why some of them appear later, and why some of them appear earlier, and why they kill some people but they don't kill other people. Let's be real. We don't know any more about the male opportunistic diseases that are in there, okay? But the criteria that you're setting for putting in indicator and opportunistic diseases for women is,
double standard.
A double standard. It's a double standard. You have not, required that for other indicator diseases or opportunistic infections, and it's just for women that you're requiring it.
The indicator diseases in there, though, are typically seen in people with low immune function. Vaginal candidiasis is HIV infected women without immune dysfunction. That may be getting into the issue of how chronic, how severe, how
yeah.
often.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, you have a classification system in which a doctor says, due to HIV, associated with HIV. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're allowing a doctor to make a causal distinction in an international, classification system, and you think nothing of it, but allowing the same clinician to make a decision.
It's a little bit like having a cold sore. We all have cold sores, most of us do. But if I have a cold sore and have a positive HIV test and have just converted last month, that doesn't mean I have AIDS. Because everybody gets cold sores, and the fact that it's now if it gets worse and becomes massive, the definition of standard invasive herpes is, then it becomes an indicated disease. But when I have a high CD4 cell count, my herpes is going to go away just like it does in anybody else. So to take something that's common and doesn't have an atypical course and add it to a disease definition just doesn't
But it has an atypical course in immunosuppressed
people.
Well,
that's the real question.
Well, yes, but all HIV women with HIV are not immunosuppressed. That's, I think, what we're discussing. Mm-hmm. And so if we say that, you know, women who first are infected with HIV, if they have vaginal candidiasis, their course may be quite typical. I always believe women should be treated for vaginal candidiasis. I don't think it's something that shouldn't be. And I think it should be aggressively treated in all women. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that adding it to the case definition will ensure that women will be treated aggressively for vaginal candidiasis. See, I don't understand. I don't see that as happening. What I see is that I believe that the candidiasis, when the women are becoming, you know, suppressed to have HIV infection, I'm sure the candidiasis is much worse. I'm sure it mm-hmm. is. I'm sure all diseases are worse. I'm sure, you know, PID, everything is worse. But it depends on the level of immunosuppression, not the fact that they're just
HIV. Is there any
HIV?
Way that you can put that into a definition?
No, right. I mean,
right.
Well, I mean, if that's what you're saying,
we're talking about.
I mind that.
Yeah, I mean,
what are you talking about? So when you're talking about like a T cell count below something,
yeah,
plus
well,
vaginal candidiasis equals,
right. Like if somebody has HIV infection and has a normal immune system, as mm-hmm. you know, as we can measure it, which is quite gross, and they may have quite a normal course. And then I may see women who do not have HIV infection who have terrible problems with it, keep retreating and they refractory to therapy. So this is a problem. So in other words, I couldn't distinguish them on the basis of their symptoms. But I think both of them need to be treated, and both of them need to be treated aggressively and try to find whatever you can to treat them for their symptoms and their infection. But, you know, I guess I just don't link that, putting this on the, you know, we don't have the same sort of, I guess, understanding of what will happen when these things are included, if they were included in the case definition, that this would happen. You know, that women would be treated better, they will live longer. You know, I just don't follow that reasoning.
No, I don't follow that reasoning either. That's why I said, for me, the major issue, I mean, I do think that women will, that a lot of women who have those kinds of things who are immunosuppressed will be picked up who haven't been picked up before. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Just like people were picked up when people put in presumptive diagnosis or wasting syndrome. I mean, I think that the reason those people get picked up is because MDs know to look for certain things that they would not have looked for before. Mm-hmm. I think that that specifically in terms of the case surveillance definition, I think that there's got to be a way of putting those OIs and indicator diseases in there that rests on the same trust that you put in doctors when they have to say whether something is in an AIDS-like disease, due to an AIDS-like disease, or with an AIDS-like disease. Mm-hmm. You trust them there, but somehow, again, when we get to the issues of women, nobody is willing to trust that clinical decision. Okay? Somehow, in that situation, we need extreme research. And somehow, we can't come up with a way to phrase it that would be acceptable. To me, that's not acceptable. I can't believe that's impossible to do. You know, I mean, medicine is not an exact science, and yet we've learned to live with it in its inexactness for men. But we somehow can't figure out how to do it under the circumstance, and I do think it makes a difference. I think that most, in reporting AIDS cases for surveillance purposes, the reason there's a huge undercount is because a lot of people don't want to make that diagnosis. We know that, and we know that they
right.
definitely avoid making it.
But who avoids it?
No.
The patient or the doctor?
The doctor, okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that in the majority of the cases, okay, where that's happening, we will not have to worry about people, you know, suddenly rushing to put cases of vaginal thrush down as an AIDS diagnosis. Most doctors dismiss almost every complaint that women have, most gynecologists, okay? They just do. You're fatigued, go home. You know, you're this, every woman gets that. You know, we're still living in Hysteriaville, you know, in terms of the image of women by most doctors. So I don't think that by putting any of that stuff in, that you're going to suddenly get a rash of cases that are not AIDS. I think that what you're going to be doing is that you're going to be giving the people who work with HIV-positive women who are showing severe morbidity, but that is how they're showing it, okay, before they get sepsis and die the next day. Do you know what I mean? By the time you get sepsis and you die, you know, you die.
Right.
You know, to put that in so we catch yet more women when they're close to death, as opposed to putting in something that would require judgment but might alert somebody and the nation at large to the existence of these things seems to me, I don't know, irresponsible.
Then you talk about getting into less severe disease, and I think they're getting women recognized earlier.
What is less severe disease? Pelvic floor disease, refractory, requires hospitalization, hysterectomy? I'm really...
Pneumocystis, people live for years after an episode.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what you mean by that, less severe. Certainly cervical carcinoma is not less severe than what?
She was just talking about vaginal
glasses. I'm just saying, like, everybody goes back to that because in a way it lets you off the hook. You don't have to talk about the other thing.
I have many HIV-positive women who have had hysterectomies in New York City who are HIV-positive and they have PID, and they don't know what the cause of it is. They don't know the source. They say it's not gonorrhea. It's not chlamydia. Could it be tuberculosis? What is it? Who knows? But eventually, snip, snip. Okay, and the woman has a hysterectomy. Now, what's going on? All right. Now, are not alerting people earlier on to think about this PID needs to be maybe treated differently. You've got to be thinking, instead of going, oh, she's HIV positive, and if I read another chart that says HIV positive, asymptomatic, refractory PID, and know that the client's in the hospital, there's something wrong, and that problem comes from fear. There's that something wrong. If that woman's in the hospital, HIV positive, with, you know, an IV in her arm, and they're talking about, well, what should we do? Well, how come nobody thought earlier? You know, we're not coming up with treatments. We're not coming up with prophylaxis. Another reason I think for us to do this is to begin to think prophylactically. I mean, this is to really push forward a prophylactic agenda, you know, on HPV, for instance.
But I'd rather find out all women, whether they're, quote, asymptomatic or symptomatic, and moving it up to the person with PID, moving the case definition alone to the person with PID, who's already in serious trouble, doesn't accomplish that either. When you get into vaginal candidiasis and say, this is a sign before sepsis, this is pushing it back earlier. And I think that's exactly what you want to do, but I don't think the case definition is the only way to accomplish that. I think it is a spectrum of disease, and we have to acknowledge that.
I think it's great that it's a spectrum of disease. I would like women to be treated the same way as men. Mm-hmm. Men are in that case definition and women are not, as far as I'm concerned. The fact that we have, and IV drug users are not, okay, and the fact, okay,
it's not all men, women issue.
I know it's not all men, women issue, but I do know that women have a specific set of organs that do not appear anywhere in that case definition.
And somehow okay? We're within
that. And that somehow, every time that gets raised, issues of scientific validity come up, issues of, you know, of needing more evidence come up, issues of, you know, not fucking with the definition come up, we'll do anything, we'll give them more care, we'll give them this, we'll give them that, but it's the one thing that's untouchable. If this is a spectrum of disease, it's a spectrum of disease for men too.
It's been changed in 85, it's been changed.
It hasn't been changed since 1987.
Is it about to be changed?
Well, why is there this big resistance to
change it
now?
It's not unchangeable.
Are you open to changing it along
these lines?
Are
you along these lines?
Oh, yes, we're
forward.
Very open to changing it.
Well, when is that going
to
happen?
Along these lines that we put out.
When can we expect that?
Well, I don't know. It would depend on if there is evidence, especially bacterial infections, that we're looking at now.
It's a little like syphilis and gonorrhea in men. It occurs all the time, and having syphilis or gonorrhea in men does with an HIV test doesn't lead to a diagnosis of AIDS.
It should.
Why?
That's another thing.
Why?
How do we know that when people are going blind and we're calling it CMV retinitis, that it's not actually advanced stage of syphilis, that the VDRLs, VRPRs are not picking up syphilis?
If they've got a positive VRL, they get penicillin, and it can't be syphilis retinitis.
These are people who are not getting caught. What we're finding from the research that I've done and people who are very serious about researching syphilis and HIV, you'll find that people who are HIV positive, and I believe that it's the CDC that also does it, people who are HIV positive can't rely on VDRLs and RPRs to get correct information about whether or not they're positive for syphilis because of their immune suppression.
That was published in MMWR.
Yeah, that was an MMWR publication, so.
I don't know if you want to comment on that.
I mean, there's, you know.
You could include syphilis and gonorrhea. Well, let me just, you know, and people will ask you, where's the scientific credibility?
You can include it and give the caveats that make it scientifically
right.
credible.
What caveats?
whatever, persisting for a month and then doesn't respond to treatment, laboratory evidence of HIV. That is what your definition is based on right now. It's
right.
No different for women. It's just the ability to stretch the imagination to think that one could write that in a way that would be relevant to women and IV drug users.
No, we're not just asking you to imagine, you know.
Right.
I mean, these are real things.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're not saying, you know, a bang on your toe.
As you've been saying. You know.
Well, I look at pneumonia because by far that's the biggest.
I think that's an important.
It is. It's listed here
pneumonia
too.
Pneumonia is also seen in IV drug users without HIV positives and in HIV positives that are treated for pneumonia and do great. And really, it isn't a sign of advanced immunization. And on the other hand, I'm bothered that there are an awful lot who will die with it and be immunosuppressed. So we're caught in that bind. We were never caught in that with PCP. Early on.
Yeah,
that
well, the disease is more complex now. The life
it
is
more complex.
You know, we got to recognize that.
And we are open to recognizing it.
And I think the things we're hearing about pneumonia is encouraging. That there are, I mean, just like that, there are many other things that you brought to your attention. But I can't believe other people aren't bringing to your attention that you're not seeing them grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're seeing them grade. My clients come from grade. I have a woman now, 9 T cells, severe, PID. All kinds of other problems. I have to look at her file. Gynecological problems. She doesn't have an AIDS diagnosis.
What does Melanie Thompson say?
I haven't talked to Melanie about this issue. Although I can respond to your issue about the Atlanta database. I do think that there, I participated in the design of that. We were told we should not try to capture data on vaginal candidiasis because women get vaginal candidiasis without HIV.
Who told you?
People working on that hot committee to design that database. And when I asked if we could pull that data up about 2 months ago, I was told we could not because that it was not collected, that they could hand go through the questionnaires about other infections, that it might appear under other infections in the Atlanta database. I worked on the committee that designed it. I mean, you know. And this stuff's happening here. I mean, other people will say, I don't know how many women Melanie sees, but Sam Thompson was telling me the other day, well, no studies have even been done to find out really what's the difference between if the candida that women with HIV are getting is candida albicans or something else.
Another
candida.
Sorry. What I'd like to ask is,
right?
They
really are.
But if we go back to Grady, you'd have to have severe PID to get admitted. But most of them, the great majority of them, was severe PID and HIV.
They shouldn't get an AIDS diagnosis.
Right.
But those that
do, that's sure.
They don't want an AIDS
point.
Well, why do you now have a system that says with and without laboratory evidence for men?
Right. Why?
Why is that perfectly reasonable?
I
mean, you raise that.
It's like saying, I mean, if you've got the vast majority of PID admitted, some of it severe, some
people with pneumocystis pneumonia who have had a kidney transplant or chemotherapy don't have an AIDS diagnosis. If they have HIV infection and they have pneumocystis, they have an AIDS diagnosis.
But that's they're both immunosuppressed. Sorry?
If you can, I mean, whatever evidence you need of immunosuppression. I mean, we're not just saying pick out any disease that anybody can get. I mean, we're...
Well, that would be another issue then.
But you're also talking about, I don't know who Melanie Thompson is, for instance, but...
She's leading AIDS clinician.
Okay. You can speak with doctors throughout the country. First and foremost among them, I would say Patricia Closer, who would look and say, hey, I have seen 700 HIV-infected women. I have watched so many of them die. I have built this clinic up. She's the person who came up with a study who said her clients are dying 15 and a half weeks after diagnosis, and she's the person who says to me, tubal ovarian abscess is, like,
you
rampant.
Her.
And she believes it's related to HIV, okay? Now, if you believe Melanie Thompson, I don't know who she is, but I have to think that Pat Closer carries a lot of weight in this field of HIV in women, okay? And Pat Closer also says that there's a connection between HIV, HPV, and cervical cancer and rapid progression, okay? Now, this is what she's saying. Now, I don't know who this woman is, and maybe you should call her and check it out with her.
I think she's enough women to make, I mean, she's...
But
speak to Marge Cohen.
Pat Closer saying it, Marge Cohen is saying...
Saying it, Kathy Anastas is saying, I mean, you know,
you just,
women who see hundreds of HIV-positive
women. These are scientists, these are
women, doctors.
Why do you doubt them? Okay, you're sitting here, you're doubting us, and you're all, and I also hear this fear that if you put forth...
Give us their names and where they are.
All right, but I want to say one thing. It what keeps coming up again and again is, you know, that people will laugh, or people will say that this is not scientifically valid, or that this is, you know, and it seems to me that, the history of science and women has been about kind of laughing and making light of,
This is the lady who's quoting Time magazine last week is saying it's ridiculous that NIH should stop funding a study.
Well, good for you. Yeah.
How
many
people
are
laughing but you?
Well, he brought up laughing, and people I think that scientific credibility in women's bodies is very questionable in the first place. Okay, that science has ever treated women's bodies with respect is untrue. Okay, it just has not happened. We have a history of abuses, be it from sterilization, be it from deaths, be it from all these things. We know these things. Okay, so we have to say, well, fine. You're going to say we're not scientifically credible? Because whenever you do research on women, is it ever considered scientifically credible? Really science? Or do we have to deal with responses from people who don't want to take women's lives seriously and think that women's lives are important and worth saving? Now, I think that you all have a lot of power, and that you can use it in that way, and you can say, this is what we're doing, this is why. And you can create the caveats that are necessary. And if you don't do it, I personally sit and I hold people in this room very responsible. And I don't know what else I can do, because I feel like, you know, we try to be as clear as we can. You know, I'll give you the name of these doctors. I mean, I'll give them to you. Maybe you'll take them seriously. They're the ones I've spoken to.
I mean,
I'm not giving you this information from any place but their mouths.
And I think that's, you know, that's all we can say, actually.
Yeah.
I will send you a list of the rest of our demands, so the listing of all the diseases that we've come up with. I think that it's sort of odd that you're trying to do a definition, you don't know the major women who are seeing HIV positive women across the country.
Right.
I think that's peculiar.
Well,
the woman running the spectrum of disease is Nicole, and she does. Well, it'd be interesting to know if the same women you're contacting are the same she's contacting. But I think, you know, that is, people know these women. All of us do not know all of them.
There are so many clinicians in this country. Melanie Thompson
is... But specifically, she's been calling clinicians who treat large numbers of women.
Judith
Cohen.
She's not a clinician.
She's a PhD.
Connie Wassey is her, right?
Yeah.
She's
Oh, and he's been in CTG trials, had a pelvic examination.
So she can see all the women she wants.
She can see all the women she wants. She's never going to look inside their body. Anyway, well, we expect the definition change. That's time.
Well, one thing I would have to say is that ACT UP has its place. It has made a lot of changes and gotten a lot of attention. And we will do all we can to make sure that we are doing the best we can to make sure that everybody with HIV infection who has that HIV infection has eligibility for care, in that they have a diagnosis that is legitimate based on the criteria that leads to inclusion in CDC's case definition.
One more question. You said that you're open to changing the definition, but you have to look at this information. Any kind of timeline when you find this information, where it's going to be in, when you can look at it? Are we looking at a year or two? Are we looking at a month or two?
I can't say. I don't know if anyone else can.
I'm
going to
tell you that
some of the ongoing process.
It's ongoing.
And compelling data.
So we're still back to we're waiting for the study, right? The idea of bringing together women clinicians who've been seeing women.
And data will be coming out of that in an ongoing fashion.
And when do you anticipate that there will be enough data to start looking at the definition?
To meet me?
Peter says I'm real reluctant to say it will be a month or 6 months or 2 months. I will say that some of these data ought to be helpful by
yourself a lot of trouble if you just got together all these women who were seeing HIV-positive women and asked them what they were seeing.